Well, he was the, of course, Domya was the guru of the Pandavas. Pripacharya was the guru of the Pandavas and the... Who else was Pripacharya the guru of? The Kurus. Whose side did he fight on in the Battle of Kurukshetra? Whose side did he fight on? On the Kurus' side. Okay. So, funny choice, huh? To have him as your spiritual master. Because they saw that Ramana is detached from such things. He doesn't see friends or enemies. Okay, and then after that, in text 4, the verse we read today, which is the essence of this chapter, that this man who's lower than a Shudra has Ripa Linga, which we'll discuss more a little later, and he's hurting the pada, the legs of Go Maituna, the pair of cow and bull. So then we have the next section, verses 5 through 9, and here Shanaka Rishi asks, why did Maharaj Pricket just punish him? Basically, why didn't he kill him? And then a very important part of this chapter, in text 5 and 6, please tell us about this if it has to do with Krishna. Because if something doesn't have to do with Krishna, it's just a waste of time. So he's not assuming that just because this is being brought up, and just because Suta Goswami is bringing this up, that is necessarily something he wants to hear. He says, you can tell me more about it if it has to do with Krishna. If it doesn't have to do with Krishna, I'm not interested. It will just waste my time. And then he says, the real way not to waste your time is have such nice Krishna katha that Yamaraj wants to come. And because Yamaraj is at the meeting, he's not going to be able to call anybody to death. So as long as we have such nice Krishna katha that Yamaraj is there, no one's going to die. And he says, whereas other people, they just waste their time. So 5 through 9 is basically, tell me more about it and make sure that you're not going to be wasting my time. Make sure you're going to do something that will actually free me from death and bring me closer to Krishna. Then in text 10 through 16, Suta Goswami explains that after Maharaj Pricket perceives the age of Kali in his kingdom, he initiates a tour to defeat Kali, and while touring, he hears the glories of his relatives, the Pandavas. So here, he noticed that there's symptoms of the age of Kali. And these symptoms, of course, are... quarrel, definitely quarrel, and also... the four sinful activities. So these things hadn't existed in Maharaj Pricket's kingdom before that. And he starts noticing that people are engaging in the four sinful activities. So he didn't like this very much. But what he did like was that he had a chance to fight. He thought, well, it's not very nice that Kali's come, but at least I have a chance to fight. He saw the lemonades and the lemon, right? At least I have some good opportunity here. And then in text 11, he gets on his beautiful chariot, the lion on his flag, black horses, unlike Arjuna's white horses. And then he gets tributes from all the rulers. Although his kingdom was already given to him, he had inherited the kingdom from the Pandavas, from his grandfather Arjuna, still he had to go also and collect taxes. And then that as he's going, everyone is praising him. And they're also praising the Pandavas. And he's enjoying this praise very much because it's connected with Krishna. Okay. Then, text 17 through 24 is Dharma the bull asking questions of Bhumi the cow. So he sees her crying, and she doesn't look beautiful anymore, so he asks her various questions. Why are you sick? Do you have a disease? Are you missing a relative? Are you lamenting for my problems? Are you lamenting for the demigods? Are you lamenting for the living entities on the earth? Are you feeling sorry for the women and the children, for the brahmanas? who've lost their culture? Are you lamenting because the government is falling into disorder and are no longer regulated in their activities? Or are you lamenting in separation from Krishna because Krishna's left the earth and not wandering on you anymore? Is that your problem? Then in 25 to 36, the earth answers him, and she says that her misery is caused from her separation from Krishna and also due to the age of Kali. She has a whole description of some of the qualities of Krishna in 26 to 30. And she talks a lot about separation, and then she talks of separation from Krishna. And then the very last verse of the chapter is that while they were talking, Maharaj Parikit arrives. So he was looking for Kali. He knew that Kali was around somewhere. He's touring, collecting taxes, hearing his glorification. While he's doing that, the bull and the cow are talking, and then Maharaj Parikit comes and in the midst of their conversation. All right, there's three main analogies in this chapter that I think are particularly of note. And one is in text 2. Is describing that when the king is giving in charity, this is like the cloud. So the cloud collects water and then redistributes it as rain. In the same way, the king collects taxes and redistributes it as charity. So what he's giving to everybody is their own wealth that he's collected. But he's giving it in a way that's helpful to them. And just as government is doing things like building roads and building schools and hospitals and digging wells and having utilities. So these are things that would be very difficult for us to provide for ourselves, even though it's really our money that's paying for it. So this is one of the keys to noticing who's a kshatriya, by the way, that at least the higher levels of kshatriyas, they don't generate wealth. The king is not distributing money that he's created. He hasn't created wealth. The Vaishyas create wealth. Actually, the Vaishyas are the only ones who create wealth. The Vaishyas basically take the natural resources of the earth and transform them into wealth with the animals, the land, the water, etc. And they're the only ones doing this. The Sudras are, of course, transforming like wood into furniture, so you could say perhaps that's another way of generating wealth. But the Kshatriyas are not generating wealth at all, neither are the Brahmanas. The Kshatriyas, however, take this wealth and redistribute it for other purposes. They redistribute it for purposes that benefit people. So if someone's doing this on a very large scale for social welfare work, that's one of the signs that they're a kshatriya. Well, there are some kshatriyas, obviously, who don't do this much, like ordinary police officers or ordinary soldiers. They're not so much engaged in doing this. The Brahmanas also, of course, collect charity and redistribute this. But the collection of charity by the Brahmanas is a little different. They're not necessarily giving the charity back to the same people. So the kshatriyas are collecting taxes from the people, and then they're giving that money right back to the same people in the form of services that, again, people would have a difficult time providing for themselves. Whereas, and they're, of course, also using that tax money for yajna. The Brahmanas are collecting charity, using some for their own needs, and then they're giving it to other Brahmanas, or they're giving it for the service of Vishnu. They're not necessarily redistributing it directly for public welfare activities. Public welfare activities like schools, hospitals, roads, water, nowadays would also be electricity, you know, police force. That's not, the Brahmanas are not providing that. And also the Kshatriyas, it's almost like they're being paid. They're doing a service for the society, and the society is paying them in the form of taxes, and they keep part of this money, whereas the Brahmanas now have a different mood. Their mood is, we're giving, and you're not really paying us, because often the Brahmanas would get charity from the Kshatriyas as well. So the Brahmanas are getting charity from the Kshatriyas, therefore they're not dependent on the people in general to pay them. And in this way, people can get free medical care because the Brahmins are the physicians, and free education, and so many things like that. Of course, the people are also trained to give in charity to the Brahmanas, but they may be giving a very small amount of charity, and the Brahmin is going to give their services whether they receive charity or not, whereas the Kshatriyas, if they don't receive taxes, you can be imprisoned. The Brahmin is not going to punish you if they give you knowledge and you don't give them any charity in return. Although it says in Bhagavad Gita that sacrifice without remuneration to the priest is in the mode of ignorance. So people are trained that when Brahmani gives them some knowledge, they give them something, but it might be a glass of water. You know, it might just be some sweet word, but they give them some sort of exchange. And this exchange is also talked about in text 15, there's also another exchange going on. So here, the people who glorify the king, who glorify Parikkit as he's touring, it says, out of magnanimity, he was pleased to reward them very valuable necklaces and clothing. So it's interesting, when someone glorifies you, you're also supposed to reward them. And Prabhupada talks here about glorification and acts of welcoming addresses. How do you welcome somebody? It's actually 13-15. So first of all, the welcoming addresses should be related to Krishna. You don't want to glorify somebody separately from Krishna. Yes, we glorify this person, how their activities are related to Krishna. And Parikkit was very happy to hear glorification of himself related to Krishna. Sometimes we think that devotees should never want to hear themselves glorified. But if the glorification is actually glorification of Krishna and actually glorification of their predecessors, their gurus, he is also glorification of the Pandavas, then the devotees are very happy to hear such things. Oh, how wonderfully you have fulfilled the mission of your spiritual master and how wonderfully Krishna has acted in your life. So this very much the devotees like. We're studying again Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and Gopakumar tells his story to the Brahmana, his Brahmana disciple. Why? Because it's a story of the power of chanting of the Gopal mantra, and it's a story of how Krishna is providing so many wonderful things and Krishna's glories. Therefore, he's very eager to hear such stories. What was the purpose of such addresses or introductions or glorifications in society? Why do we have them? Okay, so the person feels motivated and encouraged.
Yeah.
Yes.
Satyananda Maharaj once explained that when we offer respect to someone, then we put ourselves at a lower level, and then the mercy can come back.
Oh, that's nice. Other ideas why there are these welcoming addresses and introductions and things like that? Okay, sometimes it's flattery because we want something from them. And in fact, you're supposed to give somebody something, as Maharaj Parikkit did in glorifying you. Okay, any other positive reasons? Yes.
It's not something that it seems like we're personal, and we need to be acknowledged.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So some sort of same idea of encouragement. I was working with one devotee yesterday who's considering changing her service, and we were going through a whole exercise I've learned in my counseling certification about how you figure out what you want to do, how do you make decisions. And so we were going through this list, you know, what's important to you in your service. And after we had this whole list, we're working with her for a while. At the end, she said, well, there's something else. And we were, you know, what is this something else? She said, well, it's that I want to reciprocate with people. I want to be grateful, which we'll talk about a little later on in this chapter also. And first she was seeing it as something very negative. Well, people make me feel, I feel guilty if I don't do things for people when they do something for me, and I'm overwhelmed by this guilt, and I just want to play God and please everybody. She was saying it very negatively. And after a while, we came down to what it was is you want to feel that you're valued. You want to be in a position where you feel that you're valued. So this essay is very important to all human beings, all living entities. We want to be in a position where we feel that what we're doing has some meaning. Nobody wants to do something meaningless that has no value. And one way that we know that what we're doing is valuable is somebody else describes it to us. And we get some feedback from other people. And someone says, oh, this thing you're doing is valuable because of this and this and this. You've helped me in this way. You've helped us in this way. This is how Krishna is working in your life in this way. And this way by getting this sort of feedback, we can understand, yes, what I'm doing has some meaning. It has some value. And I like what Krishna Kshetrabhu said about respect, that it lubricates society. And also, if you have somebody here like the emperor, people need to respect the emperor in order for society to function. So I've thought about this a lot because many times, not always, but many times before I give a talk, people introduce me. And it really varies. You know, sometimes there's no introduction at all. Sometimes there's like a 2-second introduction, or here's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes there's a 2-minute introduction, sometimes there's a 5-minute introduction, and I've thought for a long time, what does this do? You know, why do we do that? And I realize if I go to a place where nobody knows me and there's no introduction, I have to work very hard for the first 15 or 20 minutes of my talk to get a rapport with the audience. I have to work much harder. Whereas if there's an introduction, I don't have to work so hard. People are automatically receptive. Does this make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
So these sort of introductions, or you know, you buy a book and it has a little thing about the author. We're working on a new translation of Manushiksha. Basically because the few translations we have are really lousy, and then some people have translated the so-called commentary of Bhaktivinoda. It's not actually the commentary of Bhaktivinoda. It's actually the commentary of Raman Maharaj of the Gaudiya Samiti. So now we're translating Bhaktivinoda Thakur songs. So the verses are in Sanskrit. I've got a translator for that. And the songs are in Bengali. I've got a translator for that. But my Bengali translator said, I'll translate this. So far she's done 2. Beautiful, beautiful. She said, but I don't want my name mentioned in the book. And I thought, this is going to be a problem, because when you get a book that's translated, one of the things you're interested in is, who's the translator? And you want to know something about them. So, fortunately, you've given me this checker person, so I think at least I can list that person. This person has checked the translations. But this respect is, as you say, that lubricates society. It's very hard to interact with people unless we have some basis for respect of them. You know, we're not going to respect somebody just because they're the king or just because they're the something, which we get into this with this Nripalinga. So these addresses also do that. These addresses and introductions, descriptions of people, they help create respect in society. So even if we're not formally doing this, how we speak about others in the community affects our relationships. You know, how do we speak in ISKCON about our leaders? Do we speak in such a way to engender respect and cooperation, or do we speak in such a way as to engender disrespect and non-cooperation? Well, this is something actually we're all responsible for. To what extent do we help the members of society to have respect for each other and work with each other? All right, next analogy we're going to look at is in text 10. That I thought this was really funny. Okay, so Kali Yuga's coming, and Prabhupada says, is no argument that in the age of Kali such symptoms were predestined. If so, then why was there preparation for fighting out such symptoms? Why not just say, well, it's Kali Yuga, so what's going to happen? And Prabhupada says, such arguments are offered by lazy and unfortunate men. In the rainy season, this is Prabhupada's analogy, in the rainy season, rain is predestined, and yet people take precautions to protect themselves. Similarly, in the age of Kali, the symptoms, as above mentioned, are sure to infiltrate into social life, but it's the duty of the state to save the citizens from the associations of the agents of the age of Kali. So one time when I was in India during the rainy season in Mumbai, devotees were driving me to the airport to fly to America. And they said, "Is it the rainy season in America?" I said, "We don't have a rainy season in America." That's when I was living in North Carolina, which gets a lot of rain, not quite as much as here, but a lot, very green place. And so they say, I said, "There's no rainy season in America." And there was silence in the car for about 5 minutes. And then they said, "How do you get enough rain?" And I said, "Well, it rains a lot all during the year. We get plenty of rain. Everything's very green." Again, there was silence for about 5 minutes. And then they said, "How do you know when it's going to rain?" And I said, "Well, you don't. You listen to the weather forecast, you have some idea." And there was again silence for about 5 minutes. And then they said, "Well, how do you know when to carry an umbrella?" It's just funny for me, because having grown up in a place where there's no such thing as a rainy season, I hadn't even contemplated those sort of questions. How do I know when to carry an umbrella? You don't always, In New York City, whenever it starts to rain, immediately all these umbrella salesmen pop up on the sidewalk that weren't there a minute ago. So if something's predestined, you take precautions. Just like here in Radadesh, every room has a heater. And no room has an air conditioner. Because even in July, there's going to be a winter. And it's going to be cold. And therefore, you have heaters in the room. So different parts of the world, they know one of the seasons are coming. And therefore, even though the seasons are coming, they take some precautions. And of course, in some places, they don't do this, which is quite interesting also. So when I first went to New Zealand, I noticed that there were no screens in the windows. You all know what a screen is? Do you call it that? And I said, "Oh, you don't have any mosquitoes here? How lovely." They said, "Oh, we have plenty of mosquitoes." So why don't you have screens in the windows? What do you do for the mosquitoes? I couldn't quite comprehend that. So generally, unless you're a lazy or unfortunate person, that just because something is predestined doesn't mean you don't take any precautions. Of course, this is also the function of astrology. Astrologer can tell you, this is what's destined. Why? So you can take some precautions. You can make some adjustments. Not just, something is predestined, therefore I just have to tolerate it. Probably said that's for lazy and unfortunate persons. Okay, text 20. There's an analogy here in the purport about sacrifice, about prison house. And Prabhupada says here, this material world is a sort of prison house, as we have several times mentioned. The demigods are servants of the Lord to see the proper upkeep of the prison house. These demigods want to see that the rebel living beings who want to survive faithlessly are gradually turned towards the supreme power of the Lord. Therefore, the system of offering sacrifice is recommended in the scriptures. So just like somebody who works in a prison house, they want to see that the prisoners are getting reformed. So this is, of course, a symptom of a higher class person. A higher class person wants to see that those under their care are being elevated. A very envious person wants to see that those under their care are being kept down. So those are three of the analogies. Then I want to look at some interesting points in this chapter. Text 4, which is again the key verse of this chapter. Nipalinga dharam shudram. Nipalinga. Linga means what? Linga, no.
Characteristic.
What else?
Marking.
Some sort of a symbol. So one thing we study quite a bit in our sociology and religion course is symbols. What are the symbols of a particular culture or a particular religion, and how are the values of a religion transmitted through symbols? So we did an interesting I suppose you could call it, exercise with the GBC a couple years ago about organizational culture. What was the organizational culture of the GBC body? You were there then? Yes, you probably had no idea that that was actually my presentation, because I was allowed to present my presentation because I had the wrong body. But anyway, it was my presentation. Having been denuded of all of its shastra, by the way, after which one of the members, I don't know if you remember this, but he got up and said, where was the shastra in that presentation? It was like he was taken out by somebody else before they presented it. But anyway, so in that presentation on organizational culture, we did a little exercise on how do you determine what is the culture of a particular organization. And we divided the GBC up into groups, and they were looking at what are the stories that people tell about each other, who are the heroes, who are the villains, different aspects of organizational culture. And one of them was symbols. What are the symbols that give us some indication of culture? And in each group, there were GBC members and non-GBC members. And one of my friends, who's a non-GBC member, was in the symbols group. And she told me later, she said that the group was denying that they have any symbols. She said it took 10 minutes for the symbol group to understand that they actually had symbols. So there are symbols that denote what's our culture, what do we believe in. What are some of our symbols in the Hare Krishna movement? Tila. What else? Japanese. You know, or maybe you don't know, that there's another group called the Hari Bowls. Have any of you heard of the Hari Bowls? It's funny, because in Hawaii they're big, big, big. But most of the world people don't know them. And they don't use japa bead bags. They don't use bead bags. They use japa beads, but they just wear them around their neck. That's how you can tell they're a Hari Bowl instead of Hare Krishna. They don't use any bead bags. We were looking at this video in our class about Buddhism. And in Tibetan Buddhism, they keep their beads like this around their hand. So those are also symbols. So you can tell immediately, okay, they're this group, that group. We've seen some people and some of the Vaishnava Sampradayas have a different kind of bead bag. It looks kind of like an upside down L. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
Right? So those are symbols. What other symbols do we have?
Saris and dhotis.
Saris and dhotis, definitely. Yes? Kuntimala. Kuntimala, yes? Shika. Shika, yes. It's probably called the flag.
Bindi.
Bindi, yes. What else?
Dandas,
definitely. Different ways of wearing a dhoti. So recently I saw one of my godbrothers somewhere, and he had the saffron dhoti, you know, as a lungi, and I said, oh, I didn't know you took sannyas. He said, well, I'm up for sannyas. I haven't taken it yet, but when I'm in this part of the world, I wear my dhoti like this. I thought, okay, that's interesting. Remember we had that devotee who had this lungi, and he'd have these sewn pleats on the back, remember? He made a presentation at the GBC meeting. So it was a lungi, and then he had these separate pieces of fabric he would pleat and sew in the back so he could say he had a pleat there one day and we have a pleat. So these are symbols. The Vyasasan is a symbol. Also, yes? We're just So in our sociology class we have 2 days of ISKCON history. So we've gotten to the beginning of the 1990s. And one of the things we go through is all the different GBC resolutions about Vyasasanas. Yes? So just like you go to the Durban Temple, there's 2 Vyasasanas built into the wall. And one of them is only about this much smaller than the other. You know, to the eye, they look identical. So one of them is Prabhupada, the other one now is Tulsi Devi, because they can't do anything else with it. So that's a symbol, yes? And then, you know, the Vyasasan just for this person, and they had, or they, is it, each temple can decide if they want to have a special Vyasasan for the Zonal Acharya. So first it was, you must have a special Vyasasan for the Zonal Acharya. Then you may, if you want, and then you're not allowed to have a special Vyasasan for the Zonal Acharya. And I remember Ravindra Sriprabhu wrote one paper. He said, we are expressing our philosophy in furniture. That's actually a fact. And there are still some places in the world, maybe I should say this, right? There are still some places in the world where they have a special Vyasasan reserved just for a particular acharya, at least 2 places I know that I've been to. one place, actually neither place did I say anything, I'm just like, okay, whatever. So these are symbols. So what Kali did is he took the symbols of a king. We were also looking at this documentary of Kumari, of this ordinary Indian man who grew up in New York, and he decided he was going to do an experiment to see how people would react to a bogus guru. So he dressed himself up like a guru. He was already Indian, so he had the right pigment in his skin, and he grew his beard, grew his hair, put on a saffron lungi, invented his own danda with a ooh at the top, Sanskrit ooh at the top, and wore his beads, and he also slept outside. He would put his mattress outside and sleep outside. It was another symbol. And in this way, just by adopting the symbols of a renunciate and a guru, people accepted him as a guru. Just by using those symbols. So this is very significant. You know, what symbols, how are they used, how are they misused? Prabhupada talks about how in Vedic times, you'd know a woman's social status by how she dresses. That the married woman would have sindoor and bindi and her head covered, that the prostitute had her hair parted on the side, the widow was wearing white, the woman whose husband was away from home was dressed very simply. We have things like that also in Western culture, right? We have a wedding ring. This is a symbol. Yes? Okay? That you're married. We also have certain ways women will dress if they're prostitutes. Although nowadays, it's getting hard to tell the regular women from the prostitutes. I was thinking this one time in London when we were out doing Harinam. I thought, how do you tell? What are the normal women and what are the prostitutes? But it must be hard for the prostitutes to make a living because nobody can figure out who they are. Everybody has the ordinary fashion is adopt the symbols of a prostitute. So these symbols are important. We should be aware of what symbols we have, how we're using them, and we should be very careful, especially in this age of Kali. That, of course, we talked the other day about Indra, who adopted the symbols of a sannyasi to steal Prithvi's horse. That we should be very careful that although we need to have symbols, they're an instant way of communication with somebody. Yes? If somebody's wearing a wedding ring, you immediately know, oh, this person's married. So those things are important. At the same time, we should be careful that we look beyond the symbols to see who's actually qualified. So what fascinates me about this particular verse, and I've been listening the last few days to Prabhupada's lectures on this chapter, is that the emphasis that Srila Prabhupada gave is that one is known by one's actual qualifications, whether one's a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, is known by their qualifications. And so the reason that Maharaj Pariksit knew that this wasn't a real king, even though he had the symbols of a king, is that he's beating a cow. Someone who's beating a cow isn't a king. Kings don't do that. So one has to look beyond the symbols to the actual qualification. And I found it fascinating, and I don't think we'll talk about it much, but I just want to put it out there. That here the age of Kali is described not just as Sudra, but as black. And Prabhupada will sometimes talk about how that the Sudras were black. But he wasn't identified as a Sudra just by the color of his skin. He was identified as a Sudra by his behavior, by his activities. That was quite interesting. And then in this text 4, Prabhupada says, the root cause of all mismanagement and quarrel in the age of Kali is that worthless men with the modes of lower class men who have no higher ambition in life come to the helm of the state management. So he said the whole problem here is government. Is people who are in government who are low class. That if you had good government, then we would basically have protection from the age of Kali. So I see so much emphasis in Srila Prabhupada's books on real kshatriyas. Okay, so that was the first point I found particularly interesting. The second point I found interesting, I've already talked about that, about welcoming in terms of the analogies. The other point in this chapter that I found particularly interesting, another point actually, there's three of them, is, we'll do a short one first, is in text 10, where Maharaj Pariksit was very disappointed that Kali was there, but he was excited that at least he got a chance to fight. So, of course, this reminds us in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, stand up and fight. And what else?
Happier than kshatriya.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, happier the kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening the doors of the heavenly kingdom. So, there's different, we all have different natures. We all have different things that bring us a sense of fulfillment. And one thing that's happy is when such opportunities come to us unsought. Even if those opportunities may also have something negative about them. So this was certainly something negative, it was something sad, but still it was an opportunity to use his fighting nature, his fighting propensities. So I was thinking about this, that we should always try to see what is the good in this situation. Even if it appears to be a bad situation, what has come to me unsought that can open for me, hopefully not the doors of the heavenly kingdom, but hopefully the doors of Goloka Vrindavan. Our Hari Priya recently, I mean, she posted these incredible posts on Facebook. You know, she's there suffering so much pain, she can't even sleep at night, wondering if she's going to have that surgery when she's only 19 years old. And she's saying, this is so wonderful, Krishna's fulfilled all my desires. So when I went to see her in the hospital, I said, can you explain this to me? She said, well, I was really praying. You know, I'm not focused enough on the holy name. I'm not focused enough on my sadhana. I don't care how you do it. But however you do it, please give me complete focus on chanting the holy name. And she said, I found it. She said, in this extreme pain, I had no shelter. My parents weren't here. My body was failing me. All of us definitely think of our body as a shelter. You know, until it gets sick or injured or starts to get old and you realize it just doesn't do what you want it to do. But in extreme pain, and she said, my only shelter was the holy name. It's like this one devotee, Braja Seviki in Mayapur. She and her husband got into a terrible, terrible car accident some years ago. Really terrible. Very severe head-on collision. And she was writing, she said, when immediately after the accident, that in order to deal with the situation, she developed the ability to go to a place which, of detachment, an inner mental place of detachment and peace. She says, now I have that wealth, and whenever I want, I can go to that place. So she said, the accident was well worth it for that ability that I acquired. So no, I was one time talking to Chandramouli Maharaj about the fact that I've had a rather unsavory companion my whole life in the form of migraine headaches since I was 6 years old. And he was asking me, he said, are there any benefits? And I said, well, yeah, every time you get a bad migraine, it's like dying. So it's basically like a little death. He said, so I get lots and lots and lots of dress rehearsals for death. And he said, oh, I'd like that. I said, no, you wouldn't. But be careful what you ask for, Maharaj. But the point is that there's always something. You know, how can I use this in Krishna's service? How can I use this in Krishna's service? So, how can I use this in some way to glorify Krishna? And that brings us to the next point I thought very interesting, which is text 5 and 6, which are the classes I've been listening to the last few days, where Prabhupada talks about here how these sages, they said, please tell us about this topic, but only if it's related to Krishna. Because those who hear topics not related to Krishna, they just waste their life. And if you're engaged in topics related to Krishna, then even Yamaraj comes to listen and you're saved from death. Your life has actual meaning and value. And Srila Prabhupada, talking about this, says that anything that you can relate to Krishna has value. He gives the example when Arjuna says, Senayor Ubayor Manje, please take my chariot between the armies. He said, what do we care about armies? He said, just like we're not interested in reading the newspaper, this war, that war, this catastrophe, that catastrophe, this politician says this, that politician said that. Of course, Prabhupada would know at least the headlines of the newspapers. He would refer to the news in his purports. And he says there's no prohibition against reading ordinary news. But we didn't find that Srila Prabhupada was absorbed for hours every day reading the newspaper. He said, so basically the same thing over and over again, right? this mom is here and that mom is there and this mom is here and this person died and this person was born and this politician tells this lie over here and that politician tells that lie over here. Right? I mean, you know, it's... But he said anything that's related to Krishna. So, of course, there's that very famous verse about chemistry, psychology, anything, if it's related to Krishna, is actually Hari Kirtan. So, of course, at another level, everything's related to Krishna. And we also have that in this chapter. Unfortunately, I didn't write down the verse number. Just don't know if I'll find it right away. Yes. Thank you, Krishna. Text 32 to 33 in the purport. There is nothing in the world with which the Lord is disconnected. The only thing we must learn is to excavate, that means to dig, the source of connection and thus be linked with him by offenseless service. So everything's connected with Krishna. We just have to excavate the connection, Prabhupada says. We must learn to excavate the source of connection. And as soon as we do offenseless service, especially by chanting without offense, then we immediately find that connection. So everything, Prabhupada's been giving a lecture on these verses, says everything can be used in the service of the Lord. I mean, basically everything except, you know, butcher houses, slaughterhouses, brothels, gambling casinos, liquor shops. I mean, otherwise, everything can be used in the service of the Lord. So it's for us to excavate that connection by offenseless service. And if we can't do that, then we should stay away from it. This should be our key in life. How is this connected with Krishna? How is this connected with Krishna? Prabhupada said we shouldn't speak anything to each other or do anything with each other unless we have established how is this connected to Krishna. And everything can be connected to Krishna. You don't have to say, oh, we can't do anything. Prabhupada was giving the example in his lecture about the microphone that he was using. He said, we don't have to stop manufacturing microphones. So we can continue. What about the airplane? Prabhupada said, if I didn't use the airplane, how could I travel all over the world to preach Krishna consciousness? But the point is to make sure that it's connected to Krishna. And that's what we want to do. Always remember Krishna and never forget it. So if anybody talks of some topic or discusses something or anything where they're not excavating that connection to Krishna, we should have no interest. And of course, elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, this is described as the crows and the swans. We had a game like this in the Gurukula, crows and swans, that the children would play. And I was just listening to this morning, and Prabhupada said, the crows, they don't go to the beautiful parks with the fountains and the rose gardens. You don't see crows there. He said, you don't see swans in the polluted water and the rubbish heap. And higher class people, he said, like to be in beautiful, clean places. And I was thinking about this in regard to different cultures and countries of the world, which I shall not name. You know, what is the culture of people who live in filth and rubbish and everything, polluting the water, polluting the soil, and throwing rubbish everywhere, and living surrounded by rubbish? And that's a crow mentality. And naturally, swan-like people don't want to live in such a place. Swan-like people want to live in a place that is beautiful. And going to beauty, we go to something else here that I thought was quite interesting, in text 11, that Maharaj Pariksit, right? He has a chariot drawn by black horses. His flag is marked with the sign of a lion. And Prabhupada says here, a royal procession like that of Maharaj Pariksit, surrounded by well-decorated chariots, cavalry, elephant, infantry, and band, is not only pleasing to the eyes, but is also a sign of a civilization that is aesthetic, even on the fighting front. So a Krishna-conscious civilization is aesthetic. Aesthetic means it's beautiful. Even the chariots, so like you see here, in this room, there's the walls are carved, the ceilings are carved. I remember when I was a little kid, And I was lying in bed looking up at the ceiling. I thought, why do they make ceilings so boring? Right? The ceiling has carving in it and decorated with, is that just gold paint or is it real gold?
It's a copper leaf. It's established so that it doesn't change
color. Oh, okay. So it's copper. In the our temple in Detroit, it's actually gold. Gold leaf in the walls and the ceiling. So this is civilization. Civilization means even your things that you just utilize are beautiful. Your walls are beautiful. Your chariots are beautiful. You decorate your chariots. You still see this tendency in India where they decorate their cars. Yeah? Even the trucks. Can you imagine? I mean, in the West, we'd never think to decorate the trucks. So they paint them with all different colors, and they put garlands and all sorts of things in the trucks. That everything should be very aesthetic. So this is a sign of civilization, that you want beauty everywhere. When I was working with this devotee yesterday on what kind of service she wanted to do, one of her criteria was beauty. And I want to live in it. I want to work in a place that's beautiful. This is a sign of a high-class person. All right, other two main things we're going to discuss before we end are the symptoms of Kali. That's being discussed by Dharma the Bull. So first one we're going to look at in text 19. Are you suffering from some internal disease, or are you thinking of some relative who's away in a distant place? And Prabhupada says that the particular symptom of the age of Kali is that no family is now blessed to live together. To earn a livelihood, the father lives in a place far away from the son, and the wife lives far away from the husband, and so on. You see this especially in the Middle East, where 80% of the people are men. And many of them have families they haven't seen for 3 or 4 years. You know, why are you here? I have my family, my wife and 2 children back in Pakistan or whatever. You know, I go to see them for a month every 4 years. Or even people, they're working someplace else and they just go home on the weekend. They're separated from their family. One person over here, one person over there. My sister married into a Yemenite family, and she married the oldest of their 10 children. And they all lived in the same area. They had been rescued from Yemen and brought to Israel because the Jews were being persecuted in Yemen. And they were living in a place where mother and father had one house, and the children, as they grew up, all got houses in the area, and the children could just go from one auntie's uncle house to the other. Right? The family wasn't separated, so you had the mother, father, aunts, uncles, cousins, and so forth. Of course, as we said the other day, in China, you don't even have that. In China, there's no brothers and sisters, no aunts and uncles, and no cousins. So there's no family even to stay together. Not only are they separating the family, but they're destroying family. So this is one of the difficulties in the age of Kali. We keep our families together over video chat, right? Instead of actually being in the same place. The other thing he says here is everyone is diseased with some kind of ailment. I thought, that's certainly true. I hardly know anybody who's healthy. Practically everybody I know has some kind of ailment. Isn't it? You find anybody that says, I have perfect health, there's nothing wrong with me? Everybody probably says. Everyone is diseased with some kind of ailment. And then also anxieties. So many anxieties. Okay, one symptom of the age of Kali. Then in text 20, the unlawful meat eaters will exploit you. The demigods don't have their share of sacrifices. Are you grieving for the living beings because there are sufferings due to famine and drought? So Prabhupada talks about here reduced duration of life, reduced mercy. He puts it really interesting. Reduced memory, but the way he puts it. Something like reduced facility of recollection. See, I can't even recollect exactly what he says. So you don't live very long. We're no longer surprised when people die in their 50s and 60s, right? Especially after 60. If somebody dies after 60, nobody's surprised. But how many of our friends have died in their 50s? Not from an accident. So reduced duration of life. People don't have any mercy anymore. Can't remember anything anymore. I find when I give a class, right after I read a sentence, I'll say to people, so what did I read? And I get mostly blank looks. And reduce moral principles. You know, I'm tired of my husband, I'm going to get a new one. Tired of my wife, I want a new one. If I can get money by cheating, I'll do it. You know, if I can sell this product. I know of one devotee company, they were selling prasadam, and their best-selling product was one in which they lied about the ingredients on the packaging. They said it had less sugar and fat and calories than it actually had, so they were selling so many of them, but actually it was lying. So it reduced moral principles. And then Prabhupada says, so-called religions where God is defied. So it's a religion, but actually they're criticizing God. And then in 21, unhappy women and children who are left forlorn by unscrupulous persons, the god of learning being handled by brahmanas addicted to acts against the principles of religion, brahmins who've taken shelter of administrative families that do not respect brahminical culture. So the bad conditions of the brahmanas, that the brahmanas are supported by the government or by business, and therefore the brahmanas have given up their truthfulness. They're no longer being, brahmanas are no longer being given charity unconditionally by the kshatriyas. But the brahmanas are maintained by the government or by the business with the string attached that you've got to produce papers and books and speeches that make us look good. And then the bad situation of women and children. Prabhupada says the women and children will be grossly neglected and left unprotected. So this is the modern idea, have sex with a woman and then leave her. And of course the women are encouraged to participate in this as well. You know, take birth control, have abortions, and just do whatever you like. And Prabhupada would give always this as the example of the fact that women socially have a different position than men. That the only way for women and men to have the same social position is for women to use birth control and have abortions. And in fact, the feminists recognize this, which is one of the reasons they fight so hard for abortion and birth control. Because they said, as soon as we get rid of abortion and birth control, the women will no longer be able to socially live just like the men. It will be impossible. But this is given to the women so the men can exploit them. And so many children left without proper care. We could go on and on and on and on with the statistics of what happens with, when families are broken and how the children are adversely affected. And then in 22, the problem that there's no regulation in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That people just, they don't consider there's certain things you have to eat, certain things you don't eat. I mean, Prabhupada, in commenting on this, said the government does have regulations. The government does say, okay, you have to have the standards for food and that standard for food. They don't know the real standard. They're allowing people to eat meat and no standards, again, for sex life. People don't have a standard of marriage. I mean, this is now infiltrating the Hare Krishna movement. So just recently I was in a devotee community where they put me in the home of these people and, oh, how long have you been married? We're not married. How long have you been together? 3 years. You know, another family, we've been living together 5 years. Oh, we're not married either. You know, and then you tell them, and the girl says, well, I don't really know if I want to marry him. I said, how long have you been living with him now? 5 years. I said, well, so this is part of the influence of the age of Kali. There's no regulation for anything. People don't have any sense of what they should do, what should we do, it says here. They're inclined to perform such acts anywhere and everywhere. Prabhupada also talks about here how the students, the innocent students, are daily victims of cinemas which attract men only for sex indulgence. So that the student population, the children, have become polluted in this age of Kali, that they're influenced by so much degrading media at a very young age. But after giving all these symptoms, the age of Kali, this is the last point we're going to make, then Dharma the Bull says, maybe your real problem isn't any of this. Because all of those things are on the platform of sub-religious principles, aren't they? And in one sense, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, this is good, this is bad, this is all nonsense. He says, maybe the real thing is that you're feeling separated from Krishna. And sometimes Krishna was away from his queens. He might go for some business here and there. He would leave his palaces in the morning to go to the assembly house, but he was never separated from you, the earth, who's also one of his queens. But now he's gone. Is this really the core? Is this really the source of your dissatisfaction? So the earth says, yes. She says, I was endowed with specific powers to supersede the fortune of all the three planetary systems by being decorated with the impressions of the flag, thunderbolt, elephant driving rod, and lotus flower, which are signs of the lotus feet of the Lord. But at the end, when I felt I was so fortunate, the Lord left me. This is a real lamentation. Where is Krishna? So we may lament for so many things. In life, we may have so many things to lament for. In our life, in the situation of the world, maybe we have incessant diseases, maybe our family is away from home, maybe we've been left unprotected and exploited. So many things. Maybe we have so many anxieties. But really, what we should lament about, we shouldn't be lamenting about those things. No, what we should really be lamenting for is, why am I separated from Krishna? And if we chant in this mood of, why am I separated from Krishna, and then we'll actually achieve all good fortune. Something I'd like to refer you to that I don't have time to talk about at all is text 26 to 30, where 40 qualities of Krishna are delineated. And I'll just very, very briefly, this has always intrigued me. In the purport, Prabhupada says, item number 14, knowledge can be further extended into 5 subheadings. So what is knowledge? 1, intelligence. 2, gratefulness. 3, power of understanding the circumstantial environments of place, object, and time. 4, perfect knowledge of everything. And 5, knowledge of the self. And then Prabhupada says about gratefulness, only fools are ungrateful to their benefactors. So that part of knowledge is gratefulness. And just a little concluding interesting fact is that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to text 18, says that these personalities of Dharma in the form of a bull on one leg, Bhumi in the form of a cow, and Kali in the form of a lower than Shudra dressed up like a king, were not grossly visible on the planet. That it's not that the citizens in general could see these personalities. They could see the symptoms of Kali. But Maharaj Parikit, being a pure devotee and being endowed with mystic vision, he could actually see these higher personalities, Dharma and Bhumi and Kali, in a subtle mystic form performing these activities. So, thank you very much. I hope you found this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita interesting. Just make a super quick review. Text 1 through 4 is, once when Parikit was reigning under the guidance of the Brahmanas, he punished the master of Kali Yuga who was causing pain to a cow and a bull. Text 5 through 7, Shanika Rishi inquires about the punishment of Kali and explains the glories of hearing about topics related to Krishna. 10 through 16, Sutta relates that after Maharaj Parikit perceives the influence of the age of Kali within his kingdom, he initiates a tour to defeat Kali. While touring, Maharaj Parikit hears the glories of his great relatives, the Pandavas, and his own glories. 17 through 24, Dharma, who is wandering in the form of a bull, questions the earth in the form of a cow about the cause of the earth's current miserable condition. 25 through 36, the earth replies that her misery is caused by her separation from Krishna's presence and by an increase of Kali Yuga's due to Krishna's absence. Maharaj Parikit then, in the very last verse, arrives. Thank you. All praise to Shiva.
Thank you.
Thank you.